getting smart.
The House Committee on Education will come to order, and we are first going to open a work session on House Bill 2362.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Dimbrough.
Before
you move.
Yes.
Can I, just to remind everyone what we're talking about, House Bill 2362 is the assessment bill that we heard the other week. You'll find the fiscal impact statement at your place. There isn't one, and this is the presentation that we heard just a couple of days ago. So, Representative Dimbrough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we move House Bill 2362 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Thank you. Representative Dimbrough moves that House Bill 2362 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there any discussion? And for the record, I do have the letter back from the Speaker approving that rescission of that referral to Ways and Means. Seeing no further discussion, Debbie, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Harper?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Yes.
Representative
Kahn?
Aye.
Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Roland?
Excused.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Orman?
Van Orman? That's all right. Aye.
And Vice Chair Dimbrough?
Aye.
And Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
And Chair Gelzer?
Aye. The motion passes, and the bill is sent to the floor. Representative Comp, will you carry the bill, please?
I would be honored.
Thank you. And I will close the work session on, unless somebody would like to make a motion to suspend the rules before I close the work session on House Bill 2362.
Madam Chair?
Representative Dimbrough.
I move that we suspend the rules to allow my honored colleague to vote on on House Bill 2362.
Representative Dimbrough has moved to suspend the rules and allow Representative Roblin to vote on 2362. Is there any objection?
Okay.
You're all very nice. Representative Roblin, how do you vote on House Bill
2362? Aye.
Thank you. And Representative Kopp will carry the bill, and we will close the work session on House Bill 2362. We are going to open a work session on House Bill 2062. We are going to carry House Bill 2062 over until Wednesday, February 25th. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2062, opening a work session on House Bill 2063, holding House Bill 2063 over to a work session on Wednesday, February 25th, closing the work session on House Bill 2063, opening a work session on House Bill 2544. Colleagues, this is the Environmental Literacy Task Force. We do not have the documents back today that we need to move the bill. So this one also is going to be held over until Wednesday, February 25th. And I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2544. And for those who are listening, House Bill 2062 and 2063, it is still likely that we will not actually move on those bills next Wednesday. But if someone is interested in knowing absolutely when we're certain that we're moving on that, please contact me and we'll make sure that you know. And with that, I am going to open and also today, for those that are in the audience, at the sponsor's request, we will not be hearing House Bill 2575 today. So if you've come to share your thoughts on House Bill 2575, which establishes the Oregon Scholars Program, that hearing will be delayed until a later date, but we'll definitely come back so we can talk more about it. So now I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2557. Kevin, do you want to give us a brief summary of the bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is House Bill 2557. The basic summary is that this requires community colleges and state institutions of higher education to have at least 75% of undergraduate courses being offered at the institution being taught by full-time faculty. It also requires public institutions of higher education to create plans to meet these requirements. Further, it directs public institutions to provide part-time and adjunct faculty health care benefits and increases in salary, again, phased in over 2015 until 2015, and it also creates some necessary funds for implementing this procedure.
Thank you. And our first panel is Richard Schwartz, Paul Fisher, and Jim Schultz. And while they're getting settled, for those of you that are in the room with cell phones or pagers, if you could please take them out of your pockets, handbags, jackets, purses, and put them not on silent, but please turn them all the way off. It interferes with the sound system, so even if it doesn't ring, it still creates a problem for our recordings. And welcome, as you come up to testify, if you just offer your name for the record and then tell us your story.
You want all three of our names at the same time?
Just as you begin your presentation, please.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Gelser and members of the House Education Committee. Thanks for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Richard Schwartz. That's without a T, S-C-H-W-A-R-Z. I am the Executive Director of the American Federation of Teachers, Oregon. Our members are Oregon's education enterprise. They teach and work in education from pre-K through post-secondary levels and include thousands of faculty known by every designation from full-time to adjunct, contingent, part-time, and graduate teaching employees at our universities and community colleges. 2 years ago, concern about the growing faculty staffing crisis in our state brought an overflow audience of our members and colleagues from the Oregon Education Associations and others before the House Education Committee on a bill called the Faculty and College Excellence Act, or FACE. Its chief sponsors were the chairs of both the House and Senate Education Committees. The bill before you today, House Bill 2557, is our attempt at continuing this conversation. Because time is limited, I'll share only a brief history of the FACE struggle in Oregon. We seek to end the crisis in instructional staffing at colleges and universities in Oregon and to lead in the national effort to reverse this trend across the country. FACE is focused on two goals: achieving equal pay for equal work for all contingent faculty through equity and compensation and benefits, including opportunities for qualified contingent faculty to move into full-time positions, and competitive pay in Oregon for full-time faculty, with 75% of courses taught by full-time faculty. We do recognize that with budget forecasts pushing the state into further fiscal turmoil, these are especially difficult times. At the same time, we hope and urge members of the committee to recognize, as we do, that a strategic investment in our faculty is an investment in our community colleges and universities that is our economic future. This struggle on issues of equity goes back much longer than this and our previous session's effort. Since the early 1990s, we sought legislation for access to health care benefits for faculty that teach at multiple institutions, access to unemployment insurance benefits for community college contingent faculty who are looking for work, and, it may surprise you, even access to basic data to better identify the nature of the problem across the entire higher education continuum. We've been opposed at every turn. Had we not, we'd likely be having a much different conversation today. Now is the time in this session, even in these difficult times, for progress. We hope at least to lay a foundation in ways that provide a framework for moving forward and toward a better future in these matters without costing, in today's environment, university or community colleges precious resources. We extend our hand in cooperation, not for a handout. Oregon is not alone, nor the first to undertake solutions to reverse these trends. California has been working on this issue for decades. The Washington legislature recently heard testimony on both the Senate and House version of a FACE bill. And in addition to Oregon, similar legislation has been or is being considered and introduced in at least 12 states. Others today will tell you in greater detail their own experiences and those at their institutions. I want to share with you a recent study, and I believe copies have been distributed to you, called Reversing Course, the Troubled State of Academic Staffing and the Path Forward. We've, in this nationwide study by JBL Associates, which specializes in education research and policy analysis for post-secondary education, you'll learn three main findings. The majority of courses in public colleges and universities are now taught by contingent faculty. This trend hits all disciplines, not just a few that might historically rely on outside experts or professionals. And contingent faculty earn unjustifiably disproportionate salaries at an average of under $3,000 a course. It's undeniable, we believe, that a two-tiered system has become common, cultivating a level of second-class faculty lacking, besides equitable pay, insurance, and other basic benefits, also lacking stable working conditions and predictable employment. We strive on a local basis to right these wrongs, but we need more than a patchwork answer. You're also likely today to hear from opponents of this bill, from those opponents, echoes of opposing testimony from 2 years ago. I'll address those in a moment. But there was a glimmer of hope, which I've expressed already, and I hope you continue it here today. 2 years ago, Chancellor George Pernsteiner testified that this is an important bill, which does a lot of things which I, George Pernsteiner, feel are very important. We accept that observation and hope it reflects a serious commitment today by all to focus this session on how to move this forward together rather than in rebuilding opposition. Opponents in 2007 expressed concerns I expect will be repeated. They spoke of an administrative burden and hurdles for reaching a 75-25 full-time to contingent faculty ratio by department or program area. That is eliminated. They argued against the cost of a ratio mandate. We never advocate for a new program without the targeted funding to help pay for it. We are not and would never advocate trading layoffs of our valuable and overstressed classified employees, closing course sessions, raising tuition, or holding down enrollment to pay for any new program. Opponents argued for local control and increased flexibility. While we're sensitive to this issue and the geographic challenges facing some institutions, it's surprising how oft these oft-asserted interests have led to the same result and contribution to the faculty trends regardless of the institution. Still, we're prepared to help develop paths to progress at the local level through shared involvement and more productive conversations and staffing decisions. Following the 2007 session, Governor Kulongoski issued an executive order establishing the Post-Secondary Quality Education Commission. It's co-chaired by Oregon State University President Ed Ray and Lane Community College President Mary Spilde. I've had the honor of serving on this commission and chairing its subcommittee on faculty and program quality. The subcommittee's greatest challenge is securing data from our higher education institutions to find the composition and trends in Oregon's higher education teaching workforce and to study and address these issues. Data was incomplete and research was thin at the time of the commission's report. More transparency and better data on the nature of the academic workforce is needed. But we all understood that this impeded our work, making it impossible to draw any conclusions at the time of the report. Our work continues, and the commission's subcommittees are developing work plans for an ongoing effort. My response to those who argue we are not in need of reversing the trends because there's no difference in teaching quality between full-time and contingent faculty is simple. We should move the second-class group up to the first in recognition of that quality. I hope you will give your full attention to the experiences of those faculty and supporters here today who have taken the time out of their work and lives to share their stories. The teaching conditions of contingent faculty are the learning conditions of the students. To bring this all back home, I'll leave you a reminder of something this committee heard just a few weeks ago from Portland State University's new president, Vim Wiewel, who said January 18th, "We have hugely increased the number of both full-time but not tenured track faculty and part-time adjunct faculty over the past 10 years. And while I always think that having some percentage of faculty like that is wonderful in fact and is an asset, something like maybe 25% of your course credits delivered by adjunct faculty is a real asset because we are fortunate in a metropolitan region where we have many wonderfully skilled people who are in professional fields and have the most up-to-date and current experience and who love to teach. So it makes academic sense as well as being an economic factor, right? But when it gets to be over 50%, you're losing what a university like this is supposed to be about, which is to have people who are involved in research, who are fully dedicated to their pedagogy, fully dedicated to being available for students. That's what the universities are based on. So we are well over anything that can be considered desirable in terms of the number of adjunct faculty, and we just keep having to do more and more of it because it's the only way to run the railroad. We know it won't be an easy task ahead, but let's get this railroad back on the right track together and now. Thank you for the opportunity to be heard today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Paul Fisher. I'm a business instructor from Rogue Community College, and I'm also the president of the Oregon Education Association Community College UNISERV Council. Whew, if you can say that in one breath. The FACE legislation is important because it exposes one of the critical issues threatening our community college system. Contingent academic labor work with many disadvantages. The disadvantage that I would like to highlight today is the lack of unemployment benefits. I believe every citizen of Oregon has a right to unemployment benefits. This belief is tempered with the understanding that individuals can jeopardize their rights by their own behavior. But no class, no group, or section of Oregon citizens should be denied unemployment benefits simply because of where that group works or what they're classified as. If academic contingents worked in agriculture, in banking, or any other industry, they would receive unemployment benefits. However, because they work in education, by law, they cannot receive benefits. Many of our citizens depend on unemployment benefits to keep clothes on their backs, stay warm during the winter, and keep food in the home. This allows them to be ready to return to work when work is found. I don't know of any person that's grown rich by overusing the unemployment system. That's a myth. Unemployment is not a giveaway program. It's a work readiness program. It supports our employers by stabilizing our workforce. Academic contingents want to perform their work, earn a living, and receive the benefits that everyone else in the state receives. I worked for 15 years in the California canning industry. During our summer packing season, plant employment levels would increase by a factor of 20. We could not process and can our fruit unless workers were able to survive the winter. Key to their survival and returning to our workplace was the assistance of unemployment benefits. The canning companies recognized the value of the efforts of keeping the workforce intact. They were supportive of the unemployment system. It was crucial to our success. As a full-time employee of community colleges, if I were to be a victim of reduction in force, I would be able to collect unemployment benefits. But if I'm a part-time employee, a contingent employee, performing the same work for the same institution, I do not qualify for the benefits. The employment classification of part-time or contingent disqualifies the citizens from these benefits. Benefits are being withheld only because the worker is classified as a part-time person. Simply stated, that is wrong, and you have the ability to change it. Please remember that contingents face this insecurity 3 and 4 times each year, with each term that they serve. It's unreasonable for us to think that they can perform their work as well as those that have the additional support. I'm very fortunate to be able to converse with different groups throughout Oregon. When talking about disparate treatment, employee groups use terms like abusive work conditions, patronizing policies, disrespectful workplaces. With employer groups, I hear phrases like support for our part-timers, appreciation of contingent contributions, and respect for the work that they accomplish. Unfortunately, these positive attributes are overshadowed by financial responsibilities. In other words, there is no substantive reason for withholding benefits from this deserving group that cannot be traced back to finances. In a fair world, community colleges would have enough funding to activate these good attributes and provide unemployment benefits for contingent faculty. But in today's world, concerns about finances are paramount. Any decision to increase expenditures is suspect regardless of the future value it provides the institution. This committee should be very concerned about the lack of genuine conversation over contingent issues. We're not talking across the trenches. We should be reaching out to all groups and purposefully illuminating the contingent issues. How do we provide respect, support, and fair compensation for these professionals? I submit that the easiest to solve and the best first step is to retire the unreasonable rules that withhold unemployment benefits. It's obvious that this is a manipulation of rules against an identified group that have great difficulty in defending their rights. It's our obligation to stand for these professionals and to provide the support that they earn. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. My name is Dr. James Saltz. I'm a sociology instructor and I'm president of the Faculty Association at Lane Community College. I'd hope to have more formal remarks prepared for today, but we've spent about 30 hours in bargaining in the last week, and I'm glad to say we just TA'd our agreement, but as a result, I didn't have as much time to prepare as I'd like. I just want to say a few things. I think my role here today is that the faculty contract at Lane Community College provides some of the things that this bill would stipulate for all faculty, part-time faculty across the state. We have the highest pay for community college in the state. We provide insurance benefits for part-time faculty. We provided seniority rights for part-time faculty. We have some protection of assignments, but these shouldn't be the exceptions at Lane. These should be the rules across the rule across the state. This legislation would go a long way to promoting that. Secondly, the sad fact is that, as was already testified to today, that there's a gross overuse of part-time faculty in Oregon and across the country. The Lane, when I started at Lane in my current role 6 years ago, 72% of all the faculty FTE at Lane was contracted. Today it's 55 in 6 years, and it's heading downward, and it's going to continue heading downward. And the reason is obvious. It's because part-time faculty cost significantly less than contracted faculty. It's not like in K-12 where substitutes and part-time employees get paid scale. It saves colleges 50% or more, depending upon their contracts, to move work from contracted to part-time, or when you're expanding to only hire part-time. The legislation helps address that as well. There's really only one word for that practice, and it's exploitation. And I know that's an ugly word, but I really don't know what other word to call it. This legislation goes a long way towards addressing that. I strongly support it. Our association strongly supports it, and we hope that you will strongly support it as well. Thank you.
Thank you all. And before I open it up for questions to everyone, keep in mind that we have 14 additional people that would like to talk to us about this issue. So with that, Representative Roland.
No.
Oh, are there questions for this panel? Well, I didn't mean to scare you away from questions. You're welcome to ask questions. I just want everyone to get a chance to speak. You've done a wonderful job. Thank you very much. Next, could we please have David Reeves?
Yes.
Reeves, Kelly Cowan, and Marissa Johnson, please.
Madam Chair, before we speak, with your permission, may I offer some handouts to the committee,
yes,
members of the audience?
Yes, if you offer them to Debbie, she'll send them to us and into the back.
And that's for the audience.
And that's for others of you, if you have handouts as you're coming up, if you can just give them to Debbie, who's our committee assistant, she'll be able to get them to each of us up here.
Yeah. There are just some statistics. As you know, we've had problems gathering data.
Identify yourself for the
record. Oh, I'm David Reeves from Portland Community College. As you know, we've had problems gathering data on how many adjuncts, contingent faculty, part-time faculty are teaching in the state. And this is some of the statistics we've been able to gather. You'll see it's a majority of the FTE, the full-time equivalency, basically the percentage of workload, percentage of classes are taught by adjunct faculty throughout the state. Thank you.
Thank you. So please, please proceed.
Okay, well, again, I'm David Reeves. I teach English as a second language at Portland Community College in the day and at Mount Hood Community College in the evenings. Should I go ahead? Okay.
Yes,
I
please.
Up. Okay. I'm just going to address one thing in this bill that's facing us today. Oh, and I'd like to say, thank you. I forgot. I'm so rushed to get my message out of here. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. Thank you for hearing us today. This is really important to us. And I know you're very busy, too. It kind of reminds me of seeing us teachers, you know, when I come down here. I see representatives running from bill to bill, committee to committee, constituent to constituent. It kind of reminds me of that hectic schedule of teachers, and I really appreciate you taking the time to hear us on this.
Well, thank you for coming to talk to us.
I'd just like to talk about one issue in the bill, Section 6, Paragraph 2. It calls for teachers working half-time or more to be eligible for health care benefits. And you'll be happy to know it doesn't even mandate any money for this or anything in a year that we're very tight on money. It's just calling for teachers to be eligible to enroll in group health insurance plans. As you know, it's a big problem in this country if you want to buy health insurance and you don't have access to group health care through your employer. Most colleges in the state don't offer don't let their adjuncts enroll on their group health insurance plans. It's just denied to them. And I've heard countless stories from teachers who tried to sign up for private health insurance, their only alternative, who've tried to sign up for private health insurance and were denied. The teacher had been divorced. She was denied because that was a pre-existing condition for mental care. I'm serious.
Divorce?
Yes. Yeah, because the counseling and everything you could go through, you know. I know. I found that very hard to believe, too, but it's a true story. The teacher who exceeded the height-to-weight ratio, you know, and, you know, it's just ridiculous, I think, really ridiculous things to deny people. The many college teachers I've met that were on the Oregon Health Plan, you know, it's very serious. There's a lot of people working a lot of hours over half time at the colleges in the state, and they can't even enroll in the group health insurance plans offered by their employer. And when they do try paying all their money for a very high-priced private plan, they're still denied that. So it's a serious issue. This part of the bill would at least allow teachers to enroll in the plans. Doesn't say anything about who pays employer contribution, employee contribution. I mean, we can work all that out later, you know. At least if people were able to sign up and enroll, that would be a huge step up for a lot of people working at the colleges, universities, state of Oregon. Another benefit would be for a lot of typical part-time teachers like myself, and I think a lot in the room here today too, that actually do work a full-time load. It's just spread out at several community colleges, in my case. It would allow people to count all that workload together to meet a half-time requirement or more, even full-time requirement, at least be counted as an employee in that regard to be eligible to enroll in a group health insurance plan. So say somebody's teaching at Portland Community College and at Mount Hood and at Chemeketa, could pool all those hours together, and that would be considered a half-time employee rather than a 20% time employee at each school, for example, or 30% time employee, which is commonly denied on a lot of group health insurance plans. At least they would be counted as somebody's working half-time work or more. This is their principal means of employment. So we're asking to get access to enroll in the group health insurance plans. You know, it's pretty common to teach at multiple institutions just because there's a real lack of regular positions open. And that's it. So if you've trained as a teacher, spent all your career mastering this profession, you're just forced to cobble together 20%, 30% workload at multiple colleges. And this bill, I think, Section 6, Paragraph 2 really realizes that, really recognizes that. Let's see, I'll finish up here. Yeah, it would just be, you know, I'm sure the administration will come up here and say, with thousands of adjuncts, we can't possibly afford to insure them all. We're not asking, we can work out later in bargaining and such who pays what share of what. It would just be great to have access to it. And it's not even all the tens of thousands of adjuncts that need the insurance, but the ones that do, the ones that don't have a spouse, don't have alternative access to health insurance, don't have VA plans or whatever, I think this is really important. It's a real gap in those of us working for the colleges in the state. So I'd just like to finish with, you know, in this country, the system is you get your health insurance through your employer. And the system was set up, I believe, after World War II. It doesn't really recognize the modern job market where people are effectively working full-time. It may not just be at one college, in our example of teachers. So, and you know, private plans spend a lot of time and resources refusing applicants and denying coverage to those they pay. So we see this is, it's just unfair that people teaching the college students of this state are denied access to group health insurance. And that's, I'll finish up with that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Good afternoon, Chair Gelser, Vice Chair Dembro, Springer, members of the committee. I also want to thank you for giving us this opportunity to come and speak to you today. I would just like to give you my perspective as a part-time instructor at Portland State.
Can you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Kelly Cowan. I teach marketing at Portland State University. And again, I would just like to give you a little bit of my perspective as a part-time instructor there. I have dual master's degrees in marketing and management of technology, and I'm currently finishing up a PhD in engineering technology management. So I actually took a break from writing a section of my comprehensive exams today because I thought it was that important to come down here and tell you a little bit about the state of part-time instructors in university education today. As a teacher in the business school, I try to take my connection to the business community very seriously. So I always make students do projects that reach out into the community. They never get to make up phony products or market them to phony customers. So I always try to make sure that both I and they actually contribute something to somebody. After all, our motto at Portland State University is let knowledge serve the city, and a big part of how we do that is by having part-time instructors, who many of whom are business leaders and professionals, who come in and teach some of our classes part-time. When I was an undergraduate, I took a number of classes from those types of instructors, and it was an incredibly valuable experience. Many of these people were partners at venture capital firms, they were CEOs, people with important real-world experience. And after I got my master's, I went out into the workforce and worked at places like Sandia National Labs, where I managed intellectual property. I also worked as a director of technology marketing at a high-tech startup company. And eventually decided to go back to school to get a PhD. Since I've done that, I have taught many classes, and now that I'm almost finished with the PhD process, I still frequently teach classes with 50 to 60 students in basic marketing, where we've basically got so many people crammed in, we can't fit any more people in the room. I have expressed an interest in teaching more advanced classes, such as technology marketing, or entrepreneurship, because those are areas that I have experience in. But my experience and many of the other part-timers that I've talked to is that the university seems mainly interested in using us to teach the basic classes, to places where we have little opportunity to leverage experience or current research that we may be working on. I know my case isn't unique because I spoke with at least one former CEO and a current CEO, who both of whom teach, but again, they're teaching classes in basic introduction to business. The original idea of using industry professionals as part-time instructors was really to leverage some of that experience that they could provide. Unfortunately, this has morphed into a system that sees part-time instructors mainly as cheap labor. Part-time instructors are paid a small fraction of what full-time instructors are to teach the same classes. They often teach out of a genuine commitment to share their knowledge, but frequently they encounter a general lack of respect and inclusion in the university community. We just can't forever keep exploiting the goodwill of people who really want to share their knowledge. Exploitation simply is not a sustainable model for attracting and retaining talent. It risks damaging a valuable asset, experienced community leaders, by abusing this relationship between industry and academia. Now, some part-time instructors like myself would be interested in moving to full-time employment if the opportunity arises. Some at the university may tell you that most part-time instructors only teach an occasional class and do not want this kind of arrangement, but perhaps by keeping working conditions as they are, this has become a self-fulfilling prophecy. I know many who do want to teach more, and there would probably be others if conditions improved. These business leaders would form a great pool of talent to recruit from. But there is little to currently attract them except doing that out of charity. The instructors I know are, in fact, quite charitable, but if you abuse people that are generously trying to give of the knowledge they have, you will eventually wear them out. There's no system currently in place to acknowledge instructors who have already taught specific classes for a number of years and give them a ladder to full-time work. People with no experience may be hired to teach a class over an experienced and competent instructor with many years teaching that class. However, experience teaching a class and industry experience really should be considered too. I don't say any of this with any animosity toward full-time faculty. I actually aspire to become one myself. There just needs to be a system that's consistent and fair for defining the relationship between part-time and full-time faculty. And I'll just close saying I know everybody is worried about the fiscal impact of the decisions that we make in the middle of the budget crisis, but most of the provisions in the Faculty and College Excellence Act just call for fair treatment of teachers and would have little or no financial impact. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Marissa Johnson. Thank you for hearing me. I'm a student at PCC Community College in Portland at the Cascade campus. I just had a few things I wanted to mention on behalf of a lot of students that I work with and go to school with there at Cascade. So I just wanted to start and tell a little bit about my story. I started at PCC below collegiate level. And so I had to take some kind of beginning classes to really get up to speed before I could even participate in a college-level English class, for instance. So one of my first classes was a writing class, a writing 115 class, in which I was learning basic compositional rules, grammar, and even improving my reading skills in that course. And during that time, I was very petrified of being back in school. I had a not-so-wonderful experience in high school, wasn't the best track record, and so my self-esteem regarding my abilities in academia was pretty low. So I get to this class, and I'm feeling very nervous and uncomfortable about the proposition of writing a 3-page paper. And needing to work with my teacher, I felt I needed additional instruction. And my teacher was really concerned about my level of concern and saw that I was very excited to be back at school and also feeling very nervous, but unfortunately did not have much time to work with me because she worked at two other community colleges and was taking the bus between those schools. And literally we were unable to coordinate a time for me to meet with her more than once that term. So I was able to meet with her. Thank goodness she was so kind and really, really worked with her schedule and mine to make sure that we got to get together. But I ended up barely skimming by with an A in that class, and maybe for some that's okay, but I've become a bit of a perfectionist, and so I wasn't very comfortable with barely getting an A, and I felt like I could have had a much stronger A if I would have had a little more participation. Not to say that she was any less of a wonderful teacher than any of the other teachers. In fact, she was one of my favorite teachers. I learned a lot from her, but I did feel I needed that additional support. So from there, I've gone through the majority of my education at PCC now. I'm scheduled to transfer at the end of this, at the end of fall, spring, I'll be graduating and beginning at PSU, hopefully in the fall. But in the meantime, now the classes are a little more difficult. Now I'm into the collegiate level classes, and I'm taking an astronomy class. I don't know if any of you have ever taken an astronomy class at the college level, but I think it should be called astrophysics. It's quite difficult. There's a lot of advanced mathematical concepts and science concepts involved in that class. I am a communications major, so science isn't really on the board for me, and it's a requirement for my transfer. Requires a lot of additional explanation for me to comprehend physics. So, that being said, my class meets Monday through Wednesday each week, and our tests are generally scheduled for Monday mornings. We have three of them, and the majority of our grade rests on the test scores that we receive. And I cannot access my teacher from Wednesday until Monday when I have a test. So, for instance, I have a midterm this Monday. I have a study group of six students that meets 4 days a week on top of our class meeting 3 days a week and our labs. And I have a B in that class because I can't get questions that come up for me during my study sessions answered before I have to take a test on Monday. So I'm experiencing that right now. I'm hopeful that with a couple of extra days of studying, I might be able to get an A in the end of this anyway, so keep your fingers crossed for me. That has been my experience. And it's not because the teacher is any less talented or has any less information to give. They're working out of the same curriculum. They're meeting all the same requirements. Some things are just difficult and require a little more time and patience and a little more interaction between the instructor and the student, and that's been my experience of it. And I also wanted to speak a little bit to student support of increased full-time faculty. There's this concern that the cost would be added to the cost that students experience in the form of tuition increases, fee increases, whatnot increases across the board. And I know that there are things in this bill that provide funding to go along with this bill so that that wouldn't happen. But even if it were to, we had the bond measure for PCC that went through this last election cycle, and students in student government and students who are interested in the process participated in forums across the district giving feedback about how they felt about the bond, and one of the major concerns was how are we going to staff instructor-wise once we have this additional space, we expand these programs and all these things, what are we going to do? Because we would like to have more full-time faculty. And the students were then, and I assume still are since I was just earlier this year, in support of having more full-time faculty regardless of what the cost. I mean, people are investing in their education. Many of our students are paying for it themselves in one way or another, whether it's right now, out of pocket, or down the road as they repay their loans and the debt that they've accumulated. And they're willing to make the investment, and I think they would be willing to invest in more full-time faculty as well, just to give you an idea that there is support for it from the students. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Are there questions for this panel? Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Sir, on the right, I apologize. I missed
David
you.
David Reeves.
David Reeves. Sir, you said something that really struck me. You are questioning the actual foundation of our health insurance, and how dare you?
Oh, my God. I didn't think I was the
first. But your point about our employer-centric system is well noted, and I think you are on the front line of why we need to blow up our employee-centric system and have insurance go back to the individual.
That would solve it. I mean, honestly, Canada shares some of the same problem with not just a certain number, a very limited number of regularized full-time, whatever you want to call them, positions, and a lot of adjuncts too. But at least talking to my colleagues there, they don't have to worry about health insurance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Springer. Thank you, Madam Chair. Another question for you, David, but mine's not nearly as humorous as Representative Maurer's. And it's not related to health care.
Sure. On
your chart that you brought in here, and I've been kind of studying this,
mm-hmm.
you have credit, and then you have credit and non-credit, and I read the two sentences above. Looking at, just because they have all the information here, Blue Mountain Community College, you've got, under the credit non-credit section, credit course top percentage, full-time and adjunct, and then that's slightly different than the other side, the credit course. And I guess the part that I'm trying to sift out of there, those personal enrichment classes that mm-hmm. I've taken at Lynn Benton Community College and my husband has taken, that are fun, they're non-credit. They're non-credit classes. So how does that factor into these?
Yeah, don't worry.
Well, I know, but I want to make sure that these numbers, that mm-hmm. piece is peeled out of these numbers.
Well, I think that's showing we need better record-keeping, that they're not lumping together, say, developmental math, developmental English, where we're trying to get people into Math 101, people into Writing 115, people English as a second language, some of those lower courses, at the we're really trying to get them up to a specific college level, and you have people with master's degrees working in that, making the same wage as the teachers teaching math and English, the part-time teachers or sociology or whatever, and those personal enrichment courses. And I think, yes, it would be great if we actually had some statistics, and I believe that's another thing called for in the FACE bill, that schools have to send you their statistics on who's employed and what, and if they actually would separate community ed from these other developmental ed courses, that I agree, that would make for much more accurate statistics.
Follow up, if I may. So that I'm clear on the under the credit non-credit section, credit courses top, full time and adjunct at Blue Mountain, it's 50.4 and 49.6. Those two percentages could, because we don't know, include those personal enrichment classes?
I know for PCC, and I can say for PCC, those don't include community ed, because I'm familiar with the statistics for PCC. I'm not familiar with Blue Mountain College. But I know the statistics for PCC, and we have gotten access to them before, and they don't include community ed in there. It's just, like I said, it's meaning GED, ESL, okay. developmental ed. Sometimes they'll separate, usually because those areas have huge amounts of adjuncts working in them. You know, it's not uncommon for ESL or GED, there's one full-timer at that campus or several full-timers, and then just the rest are just teachers paid for by the class and adjuncts. So sometimes it's in the college's interest to separate those and have you look at the statistics on the left. So I can tell you for PCC, looking at this under non-credit and non-credit for Portland Community College, a little over 45% full-time and a little over 54% adjunct, that those are not including the community ed, the personal enrichment, and those courses. Those are just, that's just the difference. That's just including developmental ed, adult basic education, GED, and English as a second language teachers, who are also required to have a master's and all the other credentials of other teachers.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
May I ask a question?
Certainly.
Just on this? So at the beginning of this chart, you have an attachment on the front that's called definitions.
Yes.
And you've got the 1A and the 1B and the consistent definition at all 17 community colleges. Is that an effort that's ongoing to have a consistent definition amongst all 17 community colleges?
Well, yes, certainly. I think in reference to Representative Spranger's question, for example, Certainly it is. I mean, for the longest time, and still, we have asked the community college how many adjuncts are employed here. I mean, especially when we're talking about health care, for example. And for the longest time, they've told us, we don't know, we don't keep records on that. If you're a company, if you're a corporation, and half your workers come from a temp agency, it's in your interest. It's the same thing. It's in your interest. We don't know. We don't know their background. We don't know if they get benefits or not. We just contract out. It's that same kind of see no evil mentality. If they don't keep records on it, they don't have to worry about it. It's a situation 20, 30 years ago when there was maybe 5, 10% of the teachers were adjunct. They were usually specialists in business industry, come in, do one class or something, and be a little bit extra for the department, help out a little bit, and offer some of their professional expertise in that way, to a point now where most of the classes are taught by teachers and part-time adjunct contingent teachers, and most of those are really working a full-time load one way or another. But you're right, the statistics are just... they're very lacking, and we have asked for information from our college for health insurance, for example. How many people working over half time? How many of those need health insurance? Things like that. It's just really in their interest not to say we don't know, we can't track it. Those kinds of excuses. And I see. Yes, it would be great if we finally had some really accurate statistics for everybody in this room to look at and really see the enormity of this problem.
Thank you. Representative Dimbrough.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, I can just speak to this quickly because I'm familiar with this. If I look back to that part of my life which is shrinking before I came here, this document, this handout really speaks to the problem that Mr. Schwartz alluded to of, you know, the difficulty of getting data on these issues, and Mr. Reeves has also spoken to. But and that's why this document is from 2005. Otherwise, it would be much more current numbers. But this does refer to what's known as reimbursable non-credit courses. So these are not the, quote, hobby courses. These are courses that are targeted for business or some ESL, things like that.
Thank you.
I have a question for Mr. Reeves.
Yes.
You know, going back to the issue of pooling for healthcare benefits, pooling work at various institutions, there is a precedent for that, isn't there, in the world of PERS, retirement benefits? Aren't those, isn't that employment pooled?
That's true. PERS recognizes that if you teach over a 50% workload for any number of PERS employers, if it totals over 50%, you're working for the state, that you are eligible to contribute to PERS and you're a member of the PERS plan. So that is one way the state does get, the PERS board, in fact, gets FTE from each college, each employee, adjunct or not, and will total that up. They aggregate from different institutions. And a lot of teachers are actually on PERS, but they are not getting health insurance. They're not eligible for health insurance.
Mm-hmm. And just a follow-up question. Thank you. And PCC does now offer health benefits to part-timers who teach above half-time. But I assume that you're covered by that. Are you getting, you know, whatever it is, $1,000 a month? Is the college picking up the full cost of a full benefit package?
Yeah, that was 2 years ago, the culmination of a 15-year struggle to get his health benefits, that we finally won that at PCC, one of the few colleges in the states that offers that. And I get employer contribution of $250 a month. In fact, every adjunct that qualifies, whether they have a family, whether they don't have a family, whether they work an 80% load, whether they work a 50% load at Portland Community College, gets a half-time single contribution. And it's better than it was. It was better than having nothing, you know, but it's not It's not, I know some people think teachers getting insurance, and I read in the paper too, you know, Cadillac plans and something, but it's the Yugo plan. But I'm more than happy to have it. I'm more than happy to pay a substantial amount out of my pocket to be eligible for that.
Thank you. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is just not a specific question to you, maybe for other folks who will also be testifying later. But there was a statement in the bill. It's I think it's page 1. Let me check. Yes, page 1. And it's line 25. And it says, whereas many colleges and universities have survived during the past decades of shrinking government support only because of the underpaid work of part-time faculty and full-time non-tenure-track faculty, and it goes on. My question is, okay, I'm reading it, interpreting it to mean that colleges have survived because of their ability to use, exploit, whatever word you would like to insert, non-tenured-track, adjunct faculty, contingency, part-time people. Would it not follow then that colleges may struggle, many colleges would struggle and perhaps die because of a relative reduction in the same use of faculty?
You know, we're not proposing that we do all these changes overnight, but we're proposing that we reverse a really steep, steep decline over the years. I think when it was 10%, 15%, but now when over half the classes are taught by adjuncts, the needle swung way too much. The pendulum swung way too much. And we're asking to halt it and then to start taking steps to reverse it. Certainly phase in any changes, certainly. I think it can be done. It's a matter of, I think it's affecting, like our student here talked about, it's you're having people just come in and teach classes and leave. It's not just about money. It's also the fact there's a lot more to the job than just teaching the class and giving the grades. There's being on the curriculum committee. What are we offering? What are the challenges facing us, say, with the, you know, high school graduates we're getting and the ones who are not on the are even not high school graduates, that track. What are those challenges facing us? How are we going to handle it? A lot of adjunct teachers are excluded from that part of the job. So it's really making them, it's really making it not a second-tier job part of the job. A lot of the job duties, those kinds of job duties, advising students, talking to students, have shifted to the few remaining full-time teachers, and it's just too much. It's just too much of a workload considering the amount of students we have.
Thank you. Representative Norman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I probably should be sitting down there as opposed to sitting here. But I'm listening to this, and it brings back a lot of memories of trying to run a Head Start program with very little money. And the challenges you face to try to keep your employees paid decently, and not particularly decently because you don't get that much money. And then having at least Head Start employees could get unemployment insurance during the summer. But the difficulty for them was they kept getting farther and farther behind. And so the worst thing about it all is that who wants to work that long when the conditions are that bad? So it compromises the quality of what you're able to provide to your students. I'm very proud of being a Head Start director. I'm very proud of the people who do the job because they're not paid well, but they're doing it because they love what they do and they care about children. And so as I listen to this, I know exactly what they're talking about. And so I just think it's important for all of us to know what it's like for these people, because I tried everything with what little I had. I extended the school year at least 2 weeks so that their unemployment period was shorter than it could have. But I'd have turnover and turnover and turnover. And for us, it was a constant training issue. But I will say that I was able to give them health care. But it was a sacrifice that they made, too, in terms of what they got paid.
Yeah. Morale is a huge issue, yes.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Van Orman. And with that, we're going to move on to our next panel, because we still have five panels to go. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we'll have Zach Martinson, Adam Swick, and Carolee Angel.
I didn't want to interrupt you, so I was happy.
Welcome. And you can go ahead and state your name for the record, and as you arrive at the witness stand, please go ahead and start speaking.
Rock on. For the record, my name is Zach Martinson. Chair Gelsler and members of the committee, thank you so much for taking the time to hear us today. I am currently a student at Portland State. I'm in my fifth year of college. Right now, I am the vice chair of the Oregon Student Association, as well as the director of state affairs at the Association of the Associated Students of Portland State University. I am here today to talk about the importance of the core tenets of House Bill 2557 and to talk about the importance of full-time faculty to post-secondary education. Let me start off by saying I love part-time faculty. In fact, many of my favorite professors are, in fact, part-time faculty. However, I'm not able to get what I need from them when I need it. Many part-time faculty are not given the offices that a lot of tenured faculty are given. As such, I have to meet professors in cafeterias and Starbucks. And as a student with attention deficit disorder, it's very, very hard to get the attention I need in the middle of a Starbucks in a busy day. Right now I'm in a class, it's called Political Research and Methodology. My professor, Professor Syl Lennart, is a part-time faculty member at Portland State University, and he is only able to teach one class per evening because he's just not able to get a tenured position. He took a vacation to Oregon and decided he wanted to spend the rest of his life here educating students and enjoying this beautiful environment. That was 15 years ago, and he is still trying to get that tenured position he wants, and as such, I'm only able to communicate with him through email, which works, but not nearly as well as a face conversation and actually getting the information I need out of him. And I can only imagine the attention that we could get if we had 100% of his attention dedicated towards higher education, as he is a wonderful and amazing professor. Beyond the limits of just having to face the limitations adjunct professors have, I've also witnessed in my 3 years at Portland State, many, many adjunct professors leave our university as they head towards places like Pacific and Willamette because, honestly, private institutions are paying teachers better. I've also seen many teachers leave the state, and it concerns me as I love education, and I think it's a necessary part of anything we're doing here in this country. A great philosopher once asked the question, why do we fall? To which he answered, so that we can learn to pick ourselves back up. I'm here to testify that in my 5 years of college, two of which were spent at Clackamas Community College, I've seen Oregon's higher education take such a fall, and it's time for us to get back up again. I realize that changes of this magnitude won't happen this session, and that it will take a serious investment from the state. However, in a time of economic recession, we cannot afford to limit the abilities of our adjunct faculty, nor can we afford to lose them. It is of greater and greater importance that we invest in Oregon's future by increasing the tenureship offered by the state. This is an investment that we need to get Oregon back on track. This is an investment that we need to fully educate Oregonians, and this is the first step we need to ensure that Oregon continues to be a leading member of this nation. Thank you so much for hearing me today.
Thank you for coming. Please.
Thank you, Chair Gelsler, members of the committee. My name is Adam Swick, S-W-I-C-K. I'm a biology major and psychology minor at Western Oregon University. I'm here to speak today regarding my personal experiences as a student. Throughout my time at Western Oregon University, it has great successes in expansion of student enrollment, as well as increasing tuition annually. Unfortunately, as increased enrollments have continued year to year, they have not been matched by increased full-time positions of faculty. Specifically within the biology department, there's been a transition from full-time employment, full-time faculty members, to the utilization of adjunct professors. So much so that of the 10 active members of the biology department, 4 are adjunct professors. Personally, of the coursework that I'm taking right now, 4 out of the 6 professors are adjunct professors. Adjunct professors are forced, due to the nature of their position, into a difficult situation where they are not allowed availability to the student because they are teaching at many different institutions. Specifically, last fall, there was an incident where a professor was not available for 2 weeks due to her requirements at 2 other universities, so that the only way that you could contact her was through her Western Oregon email system, and the email system was down. She was only available for lecture for the 4 hours of the course, at which point she had to transfer to another university to continue teaching. This is one of the fundamental downfalls of relying so heavily on adjunct professors, availability to the student. So much of education and learning takes place outside of the classroom with that relationship that you develop with the professor, one-on-one education. So I ask the question, what is the benefit? And if that benefit is matching up with the goal of higher education.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this panel? Thank you for your excellent testimony.
Thank you.
Our next panel is Joe Johnson and Scott Huff. Welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Chair Gelser and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joe Johnson, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Oregon Community College Association. OCCA represents the 17 Oregon community colleges that serve more than 360,000 students here in Oregon. I am speaking today in opposition to HB 2557, and I'd like to talk to you about the impact this legislation would have on our ability to meet the needs of our students and our communities. With me to testify is also Scott Huff, Dean of Instruction at Portland Community College, Cascade. While OCCA does oppose HB 2557 and many of its provisions, I do not mean to minimize the stories you've heard today from hardworking faculty and students who share in an effort to fulfill the promise of opportunity to Oregon students. Fulfilling this mission is a constant challenge. It's a task for post-secondary education institutions in Oregon that they must face and across the country. And it's one that we've been asked to do, doing more with less. As we collectively face the possibility of the most significant economic crisis since World War II, we are again in the position of being asked to stretch resources even further. In this recession, we are seeing how hard community colleges must do as they act as one of the first responders. This fall, our enrollment was up over 10.3% over last fall. As more Oregonians face layoffs and increased uncertainty, community colleges become a critical part of the safety net for those seeking the training and education they need to get back into the workforce. It is a sad and telling fact that cuts made in the last recession at the beginning of the decade were so deep that enrollment in Oregon's community colleges dropped by over 50,000 students. Only today are we returning to those earlier levels of enrollment. And with very limited resources, we cannot afford to adopt any legislation that will exacerbate the difficult financial climate we all face. One of the greatest strengths of community colleges in such a challenging environment is our ability to respond quickly and flexibly in a manner that meets the needs of our students, our communities, business, and industry. Passage of HB 2557 would significantly impact our ability to serve those needs would increase costs at a time when the colleges or this state can ill afford additional expenses. I would like to highlight some of the problems that we have with this legislation. It sets a requirement that 75% of undergraduate courses be taught by full-time faculty. Simply defining the concept of undergraduate is a very difficult thing in terms of all the programs that are offered in each and every community colleges. For smaller colleges, such a broad definition ignores the working realities they face. Reaching this ratio is not practicable for them because in many cases they do not offer course sections in certain subject areas that would even justify a full-time instructor. An example are outreach programs, such as the program in Baker City, where almost all of the instructors are part-time. All of our colleges require the flexibility to employ one or more full-time instructors and have the ability to add a section with more part-time instructors as demand fluctuates. And from here, I can give an example of what I mean. My first experience as a community college president was during a period of time in the 80-81 recession when times were very difficult. And I remember interviewing the students as they went through our enrollment at Clark College in Vancouver, where I was president. I remember them expressing concern about part-time instructors and course availability, and I felt as a young president I was going to do something about that. So I sat down with my dean of instruction, and I said, we're going to resolve this problem. So we offered a batch with full-time instructors at fall quarter the following year, and we met the demands of the students. Only we met all the demand of the students in winter and spring quarter. I was sitting there with a huge number of full-time instructors with no course load. You have to juggle this within the confines of not only the academic year, but in terms of when you offer the programs and whether or not you're working with weekends or whether or not you're working with extended day or whatever the case may be. It's a very difficult task to try to handle all of this in terms of a full-time, part-time ratio. We rely on part-time faculty who are experts in their full-time careers, and they teach many of our technical courses, such as criminal justice programs, which rely on part-time faculty who are current law enforcement officers, judges, and district attorneys. It would be difficult for community colleges to attract faculty with this experience necessary to instruct those classes. In short, with a worsening economy, demands on colleges grow while state support is likely to diminish. Forcing colleges to undergo such a costly new requirement would force dramatic cuts and tuition increases. I don't want to leave this conversation on a negative note. I salute the cooperative effort among the colleges, the faculty, the staff, the students, and the unions to make the case for community college funding. Ultimately, working together for better funding is the surest way to give our colleges the resources they need to hire more full-time faculty, expand program offerings, and to reach out to those students with the greatest needs. Part-time faculty play a critical role in serving the needs of community college students in Oregon, and there is no doubt that if additional funding could be made available, community colleges would work even harder to maximize the number of full-time faculty. The Post-Secondary Quality Education Commission report, which has been mentioned earlier today in the testimony, that was issued in November 2008, contains a number of recommendations regarding this issue and data that could be collected to inform this discussion. Contained within that report is a recommendation, for example, that community colleges and higher education develop quantifiable data on exactly how many freeway flyers actually exist in Oregon. Once that number is understood, the commission has suggested it will look into seeing if it can make recommendations that will improve the working conditions and benefits for freeway flyers. We salute that effort. And I will now turn it over to my colleague, Scott Huff, to provide more specific examples.
Mr. Johnson?
Yes.
I may have missed this, but could you provide a definition of freeway flyer?
Oh, very good.
Please.
Well, I think from the early testimony you may have gotten that. And that is simply it is a faculty member that is a part-timer that teaches at a number of institutions. Mm-hmm. And the term freeway flyer simply means that they must go from one institute to another in order to attain their teaching load.
Thank you.
Technical term.
Right. One that I'm familiar with. Chair Gelzer, members of the committee, thank you for having us here this afternoon. I'm Scott Huff. I'm with Portland Community College, where I'm an academic administrator. I've been doing that for a number of years, and each one of those years I spend a great deal of my time working on an academic plan out several years in the future that has to do with hiring faculty, student support staff, and other professionals support folks who will provide the services that we need to serve students that come to PCC. That involves a lot of work at prioritizing those needs, and we love education. I would love to have more full-timers at PCC. My life would be easier, but more importantly, the students, such as Marissa Johnson, who was up here before, would have more access, would have a better educational experience, and I would love to see that in place. Why am I here opposing the bill? I'm following up on what Dr. Johnson has said, which I agree with. I want to provide two specific examples of why this would be so difficult. Both of these have to do with money. And the first is that, just put it in perspective, PCC has about 400 full-time faculty members. If this bill were to become law, we'd be looking at the need to add approximately 80 full-time faculty over the next couple of biennia and out into 2015-2016, looking at probably another 200 faculty over and above that 80. To put it in perspective, what we were hoping to do prior to the economic crisis that we're now facing was to add roughly 20 full-time faculty members to keep pace with the growth that we have been seeing over the last few years, and to actually provide an improvement in that full-time part-time faculty ratio. So we're planning a 20 over the next 2 years, and that compares with having to do another 80. There's a big financial implication there. And then the second point I would make is that even in good times, if we were to do this, it is very likely that we would have to use part-time funding sources and convert that money to full-time positions. In doing so, we would end up limiting the number of offerings that we would be able to provide. We wouldn't be able to put up as many classes as we need to put up to meet the demand of the students. And that demand is huge right now, with so many people having returned to or coming to the community college, some of them returning, some of them new students. But in this hard economic times we're having right now, ever so many more students. Having the ability to use the full-timers provides us with an elastic ability to serve those students, and we would find it very difficult to be constrained into how many full-time people we would have to have. Bottom line is, it would take a tremendous amount of more dollars to be able to do this. And that said, I'll also finish by just saying full-time faculty are very important. They would definitely improve the educational experience of our students.
Thank you both very much. Are there questions for this panel? Representative Dimbro.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm pleased to hear the goodwill that both of you have expressed on this issue. It's particularly important since you're both friends of mine. And so, I want to first ask you, Dr. Johnson, you know, your point about the 75-25% ratio not being flexible enough to deal, you know, with the vagaries of enrollment. You know, we heard from Dr. Vivelle a month ago that he felt comfortable with that kind of ratio. If 75-25 is you know, if that's too high a number full-time, I mean, what would be an appropriate number, would you say?
I don't know the exact response to that, but I think I can quantify it. And that is, to the south, there was a ratio also in California, which I'm sure we could identify and put on the record, where they looked at that and a ratio also, and we could bring that forward. And the way it was resolved there was an issue that if the ratio were increased, there was a cost associated with that, and then if there would be a backfill by the legislature, then they could increase that. So they put a dollar amount to a ratio and said from that way forward they could identify what it costs and how to fill it. And I don't remember quite what it was, but I think we can look at another state in terms of a ratio that might exist.
Mm-hmm. And just a follow-up to that, you used to be the president of Clackamas Community College.
Yes.
And there is a ratio that has been agreed to of
that is correct.
66% to 33%.
Yes.
Is that a number you were able to work with?
It was a number we had to work, we could work with, and we had to work around. It worked in some cases, in some cases it did not. So it was we ran into it. I was president of Clackamas and then I'm retired now. And so, yes, we did have a ratio. That is correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I just have a quick question
okay.
For Scott. You know, one of the provisions of the bill has to do with making this question of ratios a subject of bargaining. Right. That is, you know, if we don't move forward with a statewide ratio, so the alternative would be have it be something that is bargained college by college, you know, faculty and management sitting down and doing that. I've heard that you have been involved in contract negotiations.
We miss you, by the way.
So, what do you think of that idea? Doesn't it make sense for faculty and management to sit down and, as they're talking about looking at their total pot of resources, financial resources, you know, looking at okay, so how much goes into salary, how much might go into adjusting the ratio? You know, right now, it's not. If the college does not want to bargain that, it's not bargained. So. If you could speak to that.
Try to do it within with all the folks that are behind me here, what I can say and not say since we're in negotiations. But I'd be very concerned as a citizen to have a legislative body dictate how collective bargaining agreements would be written in that way. And so that's one point. The second point I would make, I believe in 1995, the part-time, full-time ratio or hiring things were made as a permissive part of bargaining and not as a mandated part of bargaining. So this would be a change of something that occurred before, which can, of course, happen. But that subject was discussed about a decade and a half ago.
Thank you. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Chair Gelzer. If Dr. Toto were sitting here, what would he tell me the effect would be on Columbia Gorge or Jim from Central Oregon? Are we discussing a one-size-fits-all here that in truth, community college in eastern or central Oregon might not be able to fill the bill?
Representative Huffman, Representative Gelzer, Chair. The one size does not fit all is a very good way to put it, and that is for smaller institutions, especially smaller institutions that have outlying programs, it's a very difficult thing to do in terms of meeting a certain ratio because of the way that you operate the centers. You also have in smaller communities in many instances where you will offer within your curriculum courses that will not compose a full-time load. An example might be if you had a foreign language and use someone from the high school or someone that came over and taught that particular course because it doesn't fit a full-time load. So it's very difficult to come up with any ratio that fits all institutions. And I will tell you, one of the things that's unique about me is that I was a chancellor in California. I was a president in Washington State and a president in Oregon. And you just simply find that within Oregon, what is so unique about it is the diversity in size. It is unbelievable. Nothing matches Oregon in terms of the gap in size of the institutions. So any formula of any kind that you try to impose across this system is very difficult to do with a ratio.
Thank you very much. Follow-up?
Thank you for the comment. And I'm always concerned as a rural legislator when I see stuff like this, and I think the data on the sheet actually, and that's what really pointed it out to me with Columbia Gorge. I'm like, okay, there's probably a reason for the disparity between full-time and part-time. Now, having said that, you know, I'm not saying there's not a solution, and having been a private employer in Oregon for many years and providing health benefits and other benefits for employees, even part-time, of 20 to 25 hours and more, I think it's an important and valid point that we need to discuss, but just wanted to go on the record. I do have some concerns with the formula that's being presented.
Thank you. Are there any? Representative Parker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for your presentation. I'm wrestling with the complexities of the issue, and also I'm uncertain about how strictly we can develop a formula about this. I was a faculty member at OHSU. I have friends who are faculty members at community colleges back in the Midwest, and so I'm really sensitive to those issues. I've also am a private employer running a business. But and the variability, I'm wrestling with the differences in response here versus what the quote from Vim Gavel when he was here. I don't have all of the context for this quote of his. So maybe it really is due to the complexity and the range of sizes of the organizations that we're talking about in this state. Is that why we're going to have such a hard time finding one size fits all that just will not work here?
Representative Gelser, Representative Harker, it is an issue that is discussed nationally. I mean, we're not alone in trying to find a solution to this issue. It's interesting, this last summer I downloaded on the computer over 378 studies that have to do with this full-time, part-time issue, and as anybody will tell you, the complexity is unbelievable because there are so many issues that are involved in this, and other states have struggled with this and have tried to come up with ratios and other kinds of things. So it's simply not a problem that exists in Oregon. It exists across the nation, and the bottom line conclusion of most of the studies is there is a financial concern and there's a logistical concern. The financial concern is apparent. The logistical mm-hmm. concern is when you get into people at multiple institutions, there's a record-keeping issue. There's an issue of which is the host institution, which one carries the benefit, who pays for it, and the logistics that go along with that. And in smaller institutions, with the outreach, there's an issue in there that's a mechanical issue. So there's probably a logistics and a mechanics and a financial.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks.
Just a real brief follow-up comment. I think we have to do everything we can to maintain the flexibility here of these offerings at all of the campuses. We're facing really unknown times and uncertain conditions coming at us in the next few years. So we have to bear that in mind, or maintain their ability to deliver that.
Thank you, Representative Parker. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the question I would ask, having tried to work schedules in a high school, and they are totally different institutions, and I want people to know, and I understand scheduling, and that's a big part of the problem in community colleges because you offer so much more. The variety is there. But you do have a fairly large core subjects, and I was dismayed to hear that one of the things that were happening was that the math faculty or the science faculty or the what was going away. That used to be the core in community colleges that were not part-time faculty, that were the faculty. And so I'm concerned, and I guess I'd ask, is that changing? Because from all of my time, those English, the language classes, the history classes, the science and math classes, I mean, that's where the core was that helped make sure that we had that full-time faculty. And is that starting to erode as well?
Well, I think for community college, the word core is broader than that.
I agree.
And I just want to make the case that it is also post-secondary remedial. That is what we call developmental education.
Right.
It's the career and technical education programs that are so critical to workforce development. Many of those programs only have, the career and technical education programs, only have one or two faculty members. And if we're to expand those to address workforce development, it may mean that we would have to opt to fill a career and tech ed position over maybe a vacancy in the sciences or something, simply because we have to be able to handle that breadth of what a community college does. So I don't, yes, for people who are in lower division collegiate classes transferring, there is a core, but I would say the core of the community college is far, far broader than that.
If I may, just one comment, and that is, I think it is correct to say from what you heard in the earlier testimony and what you hear from us, that it is very difficult to respond to your question because of statistics. And I think that's where the Post-Secondary Quality Education Commission is going, is to try to see if there can be some common definitions that will help to frame this conversation. And I think we'll all be better off with some good terminology, some good definitions, and some good data.
Great. And we have a couple more people left in the queue. And committee, just as a time check, we have three more panels and not quite 20 more minutes. Representative Van Orman.
I will pass. Thank you.
Representative Springer.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. In light of that, if you could keep this, I think I'm asking a big question, so can you give me a small answer, please? How does this work with or this legislation, how would it impact cooperative agreements with high schools? I'm at a loss to go anywhere with that question. I've been sitting here for the last 20 minutes wrestling with that.
Well, in the case of, I think, the case of many of the community colleges, I know certainly for PCC, that when we have a dual credit program, which the high school course is offered and high school students get college credit for it, those high school teachers are employees of the high school and not of the college. So we do not pay them. They would not, in my view, be considered in any of the number counting that we would do unless they were teaching for us in a high school. But that's rare that we actually have classes going on in a high school other than the dual credit thing where it's really a high school class.
Thanks. Madam Chair, I'd point out that if they were counted, it would help our ratio because they would be full time.
that's what I was going to say.
That would have been the shorter answer.
Thank you for the question, and thank you both. Our next panel is Edward DeGraw, Monique Peterson, and Lauren Radford. Welcome. Please go ahead if you introduce yourself for the record.
All right. My name is Edward DeGraw. I teach at Portland Community College. I teach human anatomy and physiology. One of the things about this is I was a freeway flyer myself for 5 years, so I understand how difficult it can be to patch everything together and all that. But when I was on that side of it, I was seeing something that was very different than what I've seen in the last 15 years as a full-time faculty member. One of the things that people have brought up multiple times is that, well, one of the advantages of this is that we pull people out of the community that are experts in their field, and, you know, we've got all this stuff going on. Most of the faculty that we're dealing with are actually part-timers who are piecing together this job here and there because they want a full-time job. We're not getting experts of industry for most of these kinds of courses that are being taught. The other thing is when we look at the faculty and their availability for the students. I mean, in my department alone, we have 40 part-time faculty. We have one cubicle that's got three spaces in it for those 40 faculty members to meet with their students. Doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out you're not going to be getting many students in there. I sit at my desk frequently helping students out. I'll see students come in, they're looking for their faculty member that they can ask questions of, and there's nobody there because the faculty are having to go off finding another job someplace else. The whole point of this, as far as the equity issue, I find it hard to believe that we're still even discussing an equal pay for equal work and that we have to fight for equal pay for equal work. But who I see as the real losers in this are the students, and I see them march in and out of the office every day. And we have students who come in, they look for their faculty member at the beginning of the term, they don't find anybody, there's nobody around, so they leave. And they end up coming back because they didn't make it through the course the first time. So they're wasting money and time because they didn't have somebody that they could rely on to help them through their course the first time. To me, it's a criminal. I mean, it's a shame. And so we the state, I mean, we need to make the decision is, you know, are we going to provide an environment that is suitable for educating innovative leaders to help us through the problems that we're facing, or are we going to become, you know, the labor pool for educated people that are coming in from out of state that are running our businesses, that are running the things that are happening in the state? I think that we should give our students the very best opportunity that they have to be those leaders, not just somebody who's working for somebody else.
Thank you very much.
For the record, my name is Monique Peterson. Chair Gelser, members of the committee, thank you very much for hearing me today. I will be very brief. I'm a senior at Portland State University. I studied political science. Throughout my career at PSU, it's been a few years now, I have had mostly part-time professors. As a political science major, I study process, but I also study ideas. And when I imagined what it would be like going to college studying politics, I imagined rousing discussions in the professor's office after class. I imagined being inspired and having those ideas and inspirations fostered by professors throughout my academic career. It turns out that my professors are actually the freeway flyers, a term I'd never heard before, but it makes a lot of sense. And they're more likely to be, you know, in traffic on the way to teach in McMinnville than sitting in their office, you know, able to have a conversation with me, even though they all have been very interested and very helpful in me personally, which is great. In fact, the two most influential political science courses I've taken at Portland State are taught by a professor who is no longer there, and the courses have dropped off the face of the university. No other students have the opportunity to take them, and I find it's just very frustrating for me. Basically, I really love my part-time faculty members at Portland State. I would love for them to be full-time. They would love to be full-time, and That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you very much.
My name is Lauren Radford. I'm a full-time faculty member at Portland Community College. I teach in landscape technology. I'm here to give you my perspective as a full-time faculty member. We had an experience 5 years ago, one of the last or next to last budget crisis in PCC had, where our department was coupled with retirements at the time. So from a three-person full-time faculty and three-person adjunct faculty, we went to two full-time and 13 part-time faculty with that. Our part-time faculty does a phenomenal job when you consider that they're only compensated for the time in the classroom, not the preparation time. Any sort of adjunct meetings that they may go to is out of the kindness and generosity of their heart. They volunteer to do that. But what happens is that all the sundry duties of teaching are not involved with a classroom. There are many. Department meetings, division meetings, college meetings. If you're a vocational teacher such as I am, there's student advising, there's shop and land lab management, there's industry relations, there's going out to shows, marketing your programs, high school articulation efforts. So all those duties now fall on a smaller set of shoulders to be able to bear that. If it was just a matter of being able to find room on a work cart, rearranging things to do that and putting that on, we could do that. I think most teachers that have survived over 3 years have pretty strong axles. But the problem becomes that the work cart is filled to the brim. And so you have to pitch something off of that work cart in order to add these added duties. And the sad fact I find as a teacher is the one thing I can rob from, the one thing I can pitch off the cart, is my preparation time in the classroom. I know that, and my students know that, but we're not a particularly powerful block. And so I walk into that classroom less prepared than I feel I ought to be, because I've got many other things to do. And so I think the increasing part-time to full-time ratio leads to a diminishing number of tired, unprepared faculty, and an increasing number of undercompensated and probably also tired part-time faculty. And with all that tiredness around, you can't help but wonder whether that leads to tired classrooms. I just think that there could be a dollar value, some way we could ascribe a hard dollar value to quality in the classroom, that if you did a financial analysis of part-time and full-time teaching and increasing that part-time ratio, that it wouldn't make fiscal sense to do that. If only we could assign a dollar value to the quality of education in the classroom. Anyways, I hope this FACE bill is one step in that direction. Thank you much.
Thank you very much. Are there any quick questions for this panel? No?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Representative Harker.
Sorry. Dr. DeGraw.
Yes.
You said there are 40 people in your department?
No, we actually have more than that. There's 40 part-time.
40 part-time people
in
your department.
We have 7 full-time.
Okay. What's the department?
Biology. Life sciences.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
okay. So, surely, it's a broad area, but some subset of the 40 part-time would have the bandwidth and the expertise to deliver the course material, subject matter that's being delivered by the 40 part-time people?
Yes.
You could get the same course offerings out of a smaller number of people.
Yes.
And some of those people are some of these 40.
Yes.
Thank you.
Sounds like, what's my line?
Perhaps Representative Parker. Thank you. Thank you very much.
But I want to make a clarification. I mean, it is a broad area,
sure.
And so, I mean, there are specializations in there. You're
sure.
Not going to get one person to teach everything within that. I mean, like...
I didn't ask that question.
Right. And so, yeah, out of that, for that subset, yes, we could.
Right. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you all. I feel like I would be remiss at this point. We've heard a lot today about equal pay for equal work, which is something that I heartily endorse and share the consternation that we're still asking that question. And I think it's important that we remember that the group for whom that phrase was originally coined is still only making 85 cents on the dollar for what men are making. And so I, too, would like to see us resolve that question for women as well as part-time faculty.
And sure. If I could also say that the ranks of part-timers who are women is higher than men also.
Thank you very much. All right, I'm going to combine our last two panels, even though you come at this from different perspectives, but I want to make sure we hear from all of you, so be kind to one another. I'd like to call up Jay Kenton, Carl Steady, and Freya Goulard. Frank. I'm so sorry about that.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Jay Kenton. I'm the Vice Chancellor for Finance for the Oregon University System. And I wanted to start by declaring a potential conflict of interest. I am a part-time faculty member at Portland State University. I teach 2 to 3 classes a year, and I don't get any compensation for that. I'm exempt from any kind of overload pay by policy of the board. And I do it because I love to do it. And so I know I signed up to testify against this bill, and I really feel that's antithetical to what I'm about to say. But you know, our faculty are our most important assets, both part-time and full-time faculty. They deliver the goods for higher education. They teach the students. They're the front lines people. We support them 100%. I know you've heard some stories that maybe led you to believe that, and we can improve that, and I won't dispute that. The fact of the matter is this bill does have significant cost, and just I wanted to give you some idea of what that is, especially given the environment that we're in. We believe in 09-11, by the way, today 68% of our classes are taught by full-time faculty. So we would have to add roughly 10% faculty to get to 75%. That's 241 people. In addition, the bill has, and it's a better bill, by the way, than last time. I think we're more supportive of this version than we were the last version in 07-09, I guess it was. But it has another provision to bring everybody to market in terms of their salary. And these numbers I'm going to give you in just a minute, two-thirds of the cost of those numbers are getting to that peer level of salary. One-third is the cost of getting to the 75% full-time. But we estimate in 09-11 the cost would be $36 million to do this. And in 11-13, it would be $83.5 million. So it's not an insignificant sum, especially confronting some of the realities of what we heard this morning from the, or what you heard this morning, I believe, from the state economist, et cetera. I also think that, just to give you some idea, I'm not sure that measuring salary to salary is a good comparison for the following reasons. On salary only, when we compare against our peer institutions, the U of O is at 79% of its peers, and Western Oregon University is at 87% of those peers. Those are the low and the high range, if you will. Everybody else falls between those. On total compensation, however, U of O is at 88% of its peers, and Western Oregon is at 96% of its peers. We have a very robust benefit package in the state, which we very much appreciate, and it may be better to compare on total compensation, I guess, is my point, than on salary. You know, there are some logistical difficulties. I used to negotiate, by the way, with both the full-time and part-time faculty as the Vice President of Finance at Portland State. And we spent a lot of time talking about working conditions and making sure students, you know, that part-time faculty had offices, had other amenities they needed to be able to do their job more effectively. Anyway, like I said, I don't want to not support this bill, but I also, looking down the gun barrel at some of the numbers that we're seeing in the economy, I'm not sure I can support it. But we do embrace our faculty, and we do support them to the extent we can. So with that, I'll close.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Gelzer, members of the committee. Frank Goulard, I'm a full-time faculty member at Portland Community College, but I'm also the faculty department chair in my department, which is mathematics and statistics. At my college, I'm responsible to oversee 35 part-time faculty and an additional 15 full-time faculty. Approximately 40% of our classes are taught by full-time, and 60% are taught by part-time, and that's pretty much true district-wide at our college. That ratio, 40% of our classes taught by full-time. Is this okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't have to be so close.
Okay, 40% by full-time and 60% by part-time. And what others have mentioned before, both against and for this bill, ring true, and I hear it from both sides. They are advocates for the students. And students are first and foremost. You, me, I know you're not full-time employees. You're doing full-time work and only part-time wages.
We have full-time
jobs. That's right. We have
sympathy. Such as Representative Huffman have full-time jobs elsewhere. Representative Harker as well, et cetera. And so you're balancing that. And that's what our part-time faculty are feeling, is that balancing act of having to do many things at a smaller benefit package, total compensation package. And what I see from my chair's role is what's been described before, students coming in, not seeing their part-time faculty member there, wondering where to get help. A lot of us will pitch in and answer questions for that person, put them at ease. But it always comes back, well, I got to get ready for the Monday morning test. You know, how can I get help? And we just can give them some general help and send them on their way, unfortunately. And I think it boils down for all of us in this room, you know, what do we value most? We value our fellow Oregonians, whether they be students, colleagues, employees, or even our bosses or employers. We value people. We value our fellow Oregonians. And if we want to value our students, we need to value and embrace our part-time faculty members, as well as, of course, all our other fellow employees. And if you're doing that in a very honest, straightforward way, embracing this bill, sending it forward, if there needs to be modifications, such as PERS did with its modifications in rehiring retirees in rural counties and smaller areas which are under 35,000 population, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, then you must do those things. But the general message, I think, here is let's make this work for the students. The students are tomorrow's leaders. When I'm sitting in an operating room 20 years from now, for whatever reason, I want a nurse who has graduated and finished at my Portland Community College or any other community college to have the skills and the wherewithal and the critical analysis that they gleaned from a rich education to help take care of me. And that's all. So with your complexities and challenges facing you, you have a great responsibility ahead of you, too, and an opportunity. And I urge you to carry forward through this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we're out of time, but that was a wonderful note to end on. Colleagues, we'll continue our discussion about this issue. And to all of you who are in the audience, who have your buttons on, I'm sure we have many community college faculty in the room and administrators and students. Thank you all for your commitment to learning and to making Oregon a better place. So don't leave yet, committee. I have a couple of announcements for you. So I am closing the public hearing on House Bill 2557. Next week, we have a couple of special arrangements. The first is our field trip on Monday. Unfortunately, Representative Harker and Representative Maurer will be on another field trip and unable to join us. But the rest of you, the vans will pick us up in front of the Capitol. And I'm trusting you because it was suggested that I tell you 12:30. The vans are going to drive away at 12:45. If you need to get there at 12:30 to be in the van at 12:45, come at 12:30. But the van is leaving at 12:45. So please come. We don't want to miss you. We will be back in time for your 3:00 committee hearings. Watch your email. You'll be getting an electronic copy of the long-range plan for the Oregon School for the Blind. Also next Wednesday, please double check to be sure your calendars have reserved 5:15 p.m. It will be an evening hearing in Hearing Room 50 so that we're able to accommodate all of the testimony that we are likely to receive from individuals who are interested in the future of the Oregon School for the Blind. Are there any questions about the arrangements for next week?
There's just one announcement. As far as the Wednesday, both sessions, the 1 to 3 o'clock and the 5:15 is right now scheduled for Room 50 to accommodate the 1 o'clock, excuse me, to accommodate the circumstances. So it both will be in 50.
I just want to comment that I think it's really I appreciate the fact that I can sit in the same room from 1 to whenever they can spend at 5.
President Roblin, I noted that your committee that day is moving to Room 357.
I know. Just for you guys. Yeah. I thought it was going to look really great.
So 1 to 3 and then 5 to...
And then 5:15 until we wrap up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Will we have food at 5:15?
Will we have food at 5:15? You can go to the lounge and bring some with you if you'd like.
Can we bring some food?
We get extra pay?
Yeah.
Not for those who are skipping our field trip on Monday.
We're feeling really good about that.
You can have Diet Coke and cookies.
There should be equal pay.
Only if I put it too
high. I was leaving it alone.
The House Committee on Education is adjourned.
All right. Well, I owe you for a chocolate.